In Flanders fields the poppies blow, beneath the crosses row on row, that mark our place, and in the sky the larks still bravely singing fly, scarce heard beneath the guns below. I wonder if the AV team could help me just by advancing the slides. There we are, thanks. These words that I've just read were written in 1915 during a lull in the Battle of Ypres by Colonel John McCrae, a doctor in the Canadian Army. Colonel McCrae was witness to the hardship and sacrifice in war, and for some, the ultimate sacrifice, death. Colonel McCrae was fatally wounded in 1918, and a few hours before he died, he told the doctor who was looking after him, "Tell them this, if ye break the faith with us who die, we shall not sleep. Today we remember with faith Colonel McCrae as we remember the sacrifice and the sacrifice of many hundreds of thousands of others who've died in conflict." It's difficult to get a sense of the scale of numbers who died in the First World War. We see the names of them who died in churches and cemeteries and town and village memorials throughout the world and throughout this country. I've seen memorials in Iraq and Jerusalem and many different parts of the world, as well as obviously towns and villages in this country. On Armistice Day, the Queen, the Prime Minister, and many others gather at the cenotaph in Whitehall. The cenotaph, the structure here you see in the middle, was erected as a memorial to all those in this country who died in the Great War. And the head of the Imperial War Graves Commission pointed out that if the dead of the First World War walked four abreast down Whitehall without stopping, it would take them 3.5 days just to pass the cenotaph. It gives you a sense of the massive, huge number of those who died. And today we remember those who died in the war to end all wars. But we also remember the hundreds of thousands of people who died in the Second World War in Europe and in the Far East. 17,000 men and women of the armed forces have died in conflict since the Second World War. In Northern Ireland, in Korea, in the Falkland Islands, in Sierra Leone, in Bosnia, in Kosovo, in Iraq, in Afghanistan, and elsewhere. All these now have a permanent memorial at the Armed Forces Memorial at the National Memorial Arboretum in Staffordshire that was opened by the Queen in 2007. If the AV team just help me advance the slide, because I think I've got a picture of the memorial at, oh, this is me preaching in Iraq in 2001, the eve of battle before we invaded Iraq. Advance the slides again. So soldiers gather as we do and remember those who've gone before them. Why did all these men and women die? For king, queen, and country, yes. For the cause of justice and freedom too. However, as Field Marshal Montgomery wrote, "I do not believe that soldiers are greatly influenced by cause. They do not advance over dangerous and fire-swept ground in the conscious pursuit of an ideal. They fight for reasons which have little obvious connections with freedom and democracy." Those sentiments are no less pertinent now. If I was to ask a soldier or a sailor or an airman, "Are you prepared to die?" I'm sure many would say, "Yes, I'm prepared to die. I do it for my mates." Now, the enemy might have changed, and the terrain is different to those our forebears fought over. It's his personal professionalism, loyalty to one's mates, and pride in one's battalion or ship or squadron that continues to motivate service personnel to endure hardship and to sacrifice themselves over the decades and even today. This sense of community is very strong in the armed forces. In August 1914, the first Pals battalions began to be raised, appealing to local ties and loyalties. And they recruited men who lived and worked together, who then trained together, fought together, and in many cases, died together. Many of these units sustained heavy casualties, which had a significant impact on their communities. And I always find it poignant when looking at village war memorials or rolls of honour in drill halls or army reserve centres to see the same surname occurring two or three times, likely to be brothers or cousins killed together in the same battle. With the introduction of conscription in 1916, the close-knit nature of the Pals battalions was never to be replicated. That sense of community endures today. Those shared experiences with colleagues in our battalion, in battalions and companies, of training together, of going on exercises and ops together, undergird soldiers' loyalty to each other even today. And that great sense of community leads to great care and great compassion. Captain Farrell Hockley, as he was then, served in the Gloucesters in Korea, and later he commanded Three Para. He recounts an example of self-sacrifice in battle. They were in a fairly desperate situation, and their position was about to be overrun by the Chinese. The battalion headquarters was withdrawing in small groups. Captain Farrell Hockley came upon the battalion doctor. "Come on, Bob," I said, "we're about to go. We're about the last to go. You ought to have gone before this. The colonel will be off in a minute, and that will be the lot." He looked at me for a moment before saying, "I can't go. I must stay with the wounded." For a few seconds, I did not comprehend his meaning. We were all making our way out. There seemed a very fair chance some of us would make it. To stay here was to stay certainly for capture, possibly for death, when the Chinese launched their final assault on the position. And then I realized that he'd weighed it all, and made a deliberate choice. He would place his own life in the utmost jeopardy in order to remain with the wounded at the time when they would need him most. Somewhere the words appear, "Greater love hath no man than this." I now knew exactly what those words meant. Too moved to speak again, I clapped my hand upon his shoulder and went on. Now those words remembered by Captain Farrell Hockley are the words that were read to us by Charlotte just now. These were words spoken by Jesus to his disciples one Thursday evening. Jesus was speaking only hours before his own death, and in his final orders group, he explained what was going to happen to him. He was making a deliberate choice. Jesus knew the cross was waiting for him, and he would willingly let himself be nailed to it. Jesus Christ, the Son of God, could have called upon great squadrons of angels to rescue him from the cross. But he did not, because he knew that his death on the cross was the only way to restore peace between God and men. Jesus died so that we can live and live forever. Jesus died so that we can be free. Free from all those things that are at war in all of us, greed and selfishness and pride. These things are in all of us because they are symptoms of our disobedience against God, saying, "I have no need for God in my life." We choose to live without God, and the result is fear, pride, lust, hypocrisy, selfishness, and much else besides. These things destroy peace in our nations, peace in our society, in our families, and in ourselves. Jesus died so that we can be the people we were meant to be. We think today of those who died so that we can live. How do we remember them? Not just by remembering their sacrifice in war on Remembrance Sunday, but by enjoying the freedom that was won for us as good soldiers, as good citizens, making for peace, not just taking it for granted, remembering that it was won for us at a great price. We think today too of Jesus Christ who died so that we can live. How do we honour him? Not just by remembering his sacrifice on the cross on occasional Sundays, but by remembering that freedom that was won for us. We can enjoy that freedom if we trust and obey Jesus Christ. We will enjoy life, and life eternal, not just taking it for granted, but remembering that that freedom was won for us at a great price. Greater love has no man than this, that a man lay down his life for his friends. Amen.